Okay. If you didn't get this page on Monday, I think I gave it out on Tuesday. You can take a copy of it now. So Blee Nether will save some time for this. First, we'll review a little bit what we said on Tuesday, which you'll see on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. I would say it's about, I'm just estimating, about 15 lines down from the top. You'll see the two dots on the third of the wide lines. And the Gemara is continuing with the fact that David HaMelech woke up at midnight, and that's when he began his Shira. And now the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Tilim Pei Vav, Tefillah LeDavid, Shamra Nafshi, God protect me, Ki Chassid Ani, I'm a Chassid. And David HaMelech feels, as we'll soon see, very exposed, very vulnerable. It's a very dangerous situation that he's facing. And therefore, he would like to ask Hashem and find some reason why Hashem would protect him from any sort of dangers. So that's what David is asking Hashem, to recognize the fact that he's a chassid and therefore protect him for that zchus. And the question is, what makes David a chassid in this case? What aspect of his life is he emphasizing? And one approach, as we'll soon see, is that he wakes up in the middle of the night, whereas other kings will sleep late into the day, into the morning. Omar, Chad Omar, according to the Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak, have a machlokas here. Chad Omar, according to one opinion, Kach Omar David, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Lo Chassid Ani, Shekol Malchei, Mizrach, Umarav, Yeshenim, Ad Shal Shos, Va'ani, Chatzos Laila, Okuv, Lahodos Lecha. That was the sugi that we did on Daf Gimel, that Hashem, you should remember that I, David HaMelech, unlike the other Malachim, I wake up in the middle of the night and I praise you. That's one opinion. And this is what we got to on Tuesday, V'idach, and the other opinion, Kach Amar David L'Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Lo Chassid Ani, Shekol Malchei, Mizrach, Umarav, Yoshvim, Agudos, Bechvodam. It sounds like they're sitting together. I guess they had some conferences where the kings would get together and each king would sort of glorify himself in the presence of the other kings. And he would say, and this I'm basing myself here on the Eitz Yosef, which is one of the commentaries on the Agadita, that the other kings boast about the fact that they conquer lands, they're involved in political coups and all sorts of takeovers. Vani, says David HaMelech, what am I doing? Yodai meluchlochos bedam. It means that my hands are sullied with blood, because I'm checking the blood of Nashim, of women who come to bring things that have blood on them, to ask me whether or not the dam is a dam tame, if they have the status of a nida, or maybe it's a mara tahar, maybe it's not dam tame, it's tahar. And I'm involved in this on a regular basis. This is what David HaMelech does with his time. He gets his hands wet, sullied with blood, because he's interested not in glorifying himself. And the Gemara goes on to say that David speaks about v'shafir uv'shilya. These are cases where a woman ever has a miscarriage, and they bring the miscarriage, whatever sack it is, and whatever stage of development it is, to David HaMelech to paskin whether or not it has the din of a vlad, and it's metame tumas leda. There's a special tuma called tumas leda. In fact, the Torah in Parshas Tazria tells us that it all depends what she gave birth to. If she gave birth to a zachar, then she has 7 days of tuma, just like a nida, and then she has 33 days of what's called dam tahar. We don't have to go into all the details, but just to get a general flavor here. And then if she gave birth to a nekeva, then there are 2 weeks of tumah like a nida, and then afterwards there's 66 days of dam tahar. And all this you'll find detailed in Vayikra, Perek Yud Beis. And then Rashi explains here, Dibra Maskel b'shfir, what is a shfir? A shfir is ar havlad, this is the skin, the outer skin of this embryo, Shatzamas v'gidu v'abosin etzarim b'tocho, that inside the skin you'll find all sorts of bones and sinews and flesh. V'yesh shfir, you have one shafir, which is Aisha Yosheva Sol Yimei Tumah V'tara, that's called a Tumas Leda, that constitutes Leda. And that's the case of something that's Merukah. Merukah means it's already developed, the different parts of the embryo are already reached a certain stage of development. And Rashi sends you to a Gemara in Nida, Daf Chafei, and there you'll see all the different simonim of Leda. And then Rashi says, Shilya, Ain Shilya B'lo Vlad, Shilya is the sac in which the embryo is found. I think it's called in English a placenta. I don't know what he says there. V'hu kimin levush, shahavlad shochev b'socha. And he gives you the French word for it. But the Shilya is only indicative of a Leda that would generate Tumas Leda if it has certain dimensions to it. Rashi goes through the necessary dimensions here, Ein Shilya Pchusam Itefach, Vayimavian Osalafanov, and they brought these premature embryos that were born in front of David HaMelech Liros, and he had to check out, he had to do what's called a Bedika, and he had to check out the Shafir and the Shilya, Im Yesh Bakashir, to see if it had the size, and therefore it has the power to be metame the isha tumas leda, and she has to sit yemei tuma, and then those are followed by yemei tahara. If the shafir is not considered a vlad, then it doesn't incur tumas leda, and that's what the Gemara says in the name of David, that David turns to Hashem, what was my goal and what was my purpose, and that is kidei letahir isha labayla. This is a concrete expression of the general rule of Kach Tera Adif, meaning we always look hard to find some sort of basis, some sort of license to be lenient in this case. And in this case particularly, the reason why David HaMelech is motivated to try to find a Heter is because we're dealing with Heter Isha Labayla. You know, if I have to decide on a, you know, whether this meat is kosher meat or not kosher meat, okay, I mean that's a serious business too, and if someone is poor, you know, you try very hard to find a heter for it. But in this case where we're dealing with not just a piece of meat whether you could eat it or not, but we're talking about litayr isha labayla, so that's a very, very serious business, and David HaMelech would break his back, so to speak, to go overboard, to try to find some way that he could be matir. And the Mefarshim here in the Ein Yaakov, they want to know why does David HaMelech single out this particular area of his involvement in Psak Halacha? And they offer the following explanation. I think we may have touched on it in the past. David HaMelech ishtadel L'tayer noshim lebaleim, to allow husbands and wives to resume their relationship. Kidei lechaper, this was David HaMelech's attempt to find the kapar al mashe ives, the ivus that he did be'inyan basheva. So this is a direct attempt on David's part to rectify that sin that he violated.
Can I check yeah. Do we pass in Myros by night? Well, that's not really an issue.
Yeah, I don't think he's talking dafka at night. In the first Mandi Omer, he's saying that he got up in the middle of the night. And then he was singing songs of praise. In the second Mandi Omer, he was being mechabed himself as a chassid, because whereas other kings would be proud of their involvement in political matters, he was proud of his dedication to Paskin Shilas.
Okay.
And by the way, you could paskin at night as well if need be, you know. The Mefarshim ask a question. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that there's a fundamental difference between a Talmud Chacham and a Melech. Whereas a Talmud Chacham is Kvodo Machul, if he decides to be Mochul on his Kavod, is Kvodo Machul. And that's meaningful. But in the case of a Melech, Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machul. And here it seems that David HaMelech, instead of praving Malchus, instead of showing how a Melech is supposed to be distant and on a throne, he came down from his high throne and he got his hands dirty with Dam and Shilya and Shafir. So they answer the following answer. They said that Ein Kvodo Mochel is when it's Nogeh to the personal kavod of the Melech. That he can't be Mochel. But when it's Nogeh to Kvod Shamayim, for the sake of heaven, that Yochel Lassos came, and the Etz Yosef, who's the super commentary in the Ein Yaakov, adds a few words which I wanted to point out to you. Mishum Shezeu Kvodo V'Tefarto. In other words, on the contrary, you would think as an onlooker from a distance that David HaMelech getting his hands dirty with blood is lowering himself. On the contrary, that's the Tiferes, that's the splendor of David HaMelech, because this is all being done lichvod Shamayim.
It's like when he danced up with the Aron Kodesh.
Right, you're right, yeah. Mefarkeis and Mefazeis lifnei Hashem, right. She wasn't so happy about it, Michal Bashol. So the Gemara is saying that he made an effort, David HaMelech, l'tayer isha l'baila. And the emphasis here is on the word l'tayer. As we saw before, this was David's attempt to rectify his sin. He adds another phrase over here, the name of the same Eitz Yosef, that Gambi Ofin Shabeine Kolach Chachamim Nirisha Hayolatame, even if other Chachamim thought that there's room here to be Machmir and to be Metamehar, but nevertheless, in Beine David Hayanirilatayr, if he found a way of being Metayrha, Hayadochek Atzmo Lo Razu, he would go and push himself, even if it was Dachuk, if it was a difficult leg to stand on, Kidelatayr Isha Labaila. This is what David HaMelech is proud of. And the Ben Yehoyada, that's the Ben Ish Chai, says that David HaMelech was a chassid, a great chassid in many different areas. Why were these two areas singled out by Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak? Number one, that he woke up in the middle of the night, and number two, that he was involved in Dam, Shilya, and so forth and so on. And he offers the following answer. He says that Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak and our Gemara were bothered by the language chassid ani. The phrase chassid ani sounds like he, David HaMelech, had a very unique form or expression of chassidus that you didn't find by others, chassid ani. So that's what bothered them. How did David HaMelech know that he's a chassid to the exclusion of others? And the answer that both Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak are offering is that his chassidus was binyani malchus. If you're talking about chassidim amongst the rank and file citizen, there are many expressions of chassidus and forms of chassidus. People run after mitzvahs, they're eager to do mitzvahs, and David HaMelech has no standard of comparison to make himself a super chassid, chassid ani. But when it comes to malchus, David HaMelech is the Melech of Yisrael. And he has the ability to compare himself to other malachim and say chassid ani in contrast if you compare my behavior and my dedication to that of other malachim. The Meiri adds another point here that I wanted to share with you. He says, Eich David HaMelech Shaya an of Gadol Shibeach Es Atzma V'Chassidus. How could it be that David, as we'll see, he's such a humble person, and yet he comes and he boasts about his Chassidus, it seems so out of character. And he answers, Sheshibeach Atzma Rak Keneged Malchei HaGoyim. When it came to comparing himself to Jews, to Bnei Amo, says the Meiri, Hishpil Atzma. He says, "Afilu keneged akatan shebektanim." He felt that he wasn't roy; he didn't deserve it, and he was very humble. He only took license to be mishabeach himself to compare Malchus Yisrael to Malchei Agoyim. That I thought was very, very interesting. Next, the Gemara says, "V'lo od." We have another pasuk, and the pasuk tells us that David HaMelech boasts about something else in his greatness. Shekol mashani oseh ani nimlach b'mifi boshes rabbi. And if you would stop here, you wouldn't be so impressed. Mephibosheth was a Chacham Gadol, and it makes sense that David HaMelech would want to get Mephibosheth's input and his Haskama. But let's read the next part of the sentence. This is really the punchline. Vani Omer Lo, and when I paskin, when I issue a verdict in a halachic, relevant halachic decision, I turn to Mephibosheth and I say, Mephibosheth Rabbi, my Rebbe, Yofed Danti, I gave the following decision. What's your opinion? Evaluate it. Was it karoi? Was it appropriate? In other words, David HaMelech, by asking Mephibosheth whether David's verdict was accurate, was correct or not, was exposing himself to the possibility, as we'll soon see, that Mephibosheth would embarrass him publicly and tell him that his psak was incorrect, that he made a mistake. And David HaMelech didn't shy away from that. That's called Yofed Danti. And the word Danti usually indicates that he had a decision to make between two litigants. That's called Hayu Mesuna Bedin in the Lashon of the Mishnah at the beginning of Avos. Din usually refers to when you have two litigants in front of you, one is claiming this and one is claiming that. But the only thing is, I get the impression that the word Danti here means something else. Why? Because the next phrase is Yofe Chiyavti, Yofe Zikisi. So the question is, how do I interpret those words? Yofe Chiyavti, Yofe Zikisi is exactly what I thought Yofe Danti means. Which means to din, when you judge, adun, between two litigants, you have to say that one is Chayev and one is Zakai. Meaning one has to pay because he was sued for damages or whatever he was sued for. You know, you borrowed money from me, you didn't pay me back. Or you stole money, or you took an object that and you didn't pay yet for it, and so forth and so on. Yofen Zikisi, or I would determine that he doesn't have to pay. That would seem to be Dine Mominus. So therefore I'm tempted to think that when it says Yofed Danti, maybe the word Danti here is a reference to Iser Veheter. It's a reference to not Choshen Mishpat, which are the laws of monetary litigations, but rather to Yoredeya, which is the part of the Torah in which you deal with kashrus laws and ceremonial laws, ritual laws, laws of Iser and laws of Heter. And for example, in the case of Dam, Shafir Vishilya, that might all be included in Yofed Danti. That's what I thought. But then I read the next line in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, Yofed Tiharti, Yofed Timesi. So then I have to retract what I said to you before, that Yofed Danti is a reference to Dam Nida, or Shafir, or Shilya, because that comes under Yofed Tiharti, Yofed Timesi. So in any event, my final impression, again, you can argue with me, but I'm just suggesting that maybe Yofed Danti means that if you have a question of Isa Veheter, you have to be done. And what's that diun? You know, you have to use sfeikus, and you have to use all sorts of kloli hakros in order to determine halacha. But be that as it may, in all these areas of halacha, David came to some final conclusion, and he paskin, he handed down a decision, v'lo boshti, and David HaMelech boasts the fact that he's not embarrassed to turn to Mephibosheth. Obviously he's very vulnerable now, exposing himself to the possibility that Mephibosheth would tell him he made a mistake. And here the Mepharshim want to know, if we take this Gemara very literally, David turns to it describes his Rebbe as Mephibosheth Rabbi. And the Gemara establishes in Sanhedrin that you're not allowed to call your Rebbe by his name. And how could he say his name? And there are a whole bunch of answers to this question. I'll just mention two or three of them. One answer is that the halacha that you can't mention your Rebbe's name only applies to Rebbe Muvhak, meaning he learned all his Torah, or most of his Torah, from that Rebbe. In the case of David HaMelech, he had Mephibosheth as one of his Rebbeim, but he had other Rebbeim as well. And if it's a Rav Sheino Muvhak, then the halacha doesn't get so strict that you're not allowed to mention your Rebbe's name. Others say, this is the Parshas Drachim, the Mishnah Melech, that you're allowed to say your Rebbe's name if he's not present in front of you. That's one condition. And number two, if you add the word Rabbi, so you can't call him by his first name even if he's not present, but if you add the word Rabbi, then you're allowed to mention his first name, but only if he's not present. And here, David HaMelech is talking not in the presence of Mephibosheth, but when Mephibosheth is not there. The third answer we'll see in a minute, because I'm not so sure that Mephibosheth was really his name.
So are we saying here that David asked him, after David had passed him, David asked him whether he was right or not, and in each case he said he was right?
No, we're going to see that he in many, many cases he said that David made a mistake.
And then what happened?
Okay, that hang on there for Michael for just 3-4 minutes and we'll get back to that, because there's a whole process here. We're going to see that originally David was right, and then Mephibosheth said he's wrong, and then we came back and we said no, David is right. And it's a whole kit and caboodle here. There's a whole chad gadya. The Mefarshim on the Ein Yaakov asked the following question: why is it that David HaMelech is so wordy here, so verbose? He could have shortened his sentence with the following words. He could have said, "Ani nimlach b'mefibosheth rabbi v'lo boshti." Why does he have to say, "Yofe danti, yofe chiyavti"? There's a whole arichus here. Why the lengthy presentation here of David HaMelech?
What does nimlach mean?
Nimlach means to ask someone's advice. That's called to be nimlach. So I was very fascinated by this answer that's offered by the Mefarshim, and they say the following: that normally, if you would want to get another opinion, and you're afraid to expose yourself to embarrassment that second opinion might contravene yours, so what you do is you tell someone, some chacham, in a general sort of way, what do you think is the halacha in this case? And you conceal from him your psak. What David HaMelech takes pride in is that he goes so far and he says, "Kach danti," meaning I've already issued the psak and I'm telling Mephibosheth exactly what my verdict was. That's really exposing yourself to embarrassment. V'afal piche, nevertheless, David HaMelech said exactly what he paskin, and Mephibosheth now could undermine exactly what David had already paskin, and that's really embarrassing. So if David didn't tell Mephibosheth, you know, what his psak was, then it wouldn't be so embarrassing if Mephibosheth came to a different conclusion. And this is what David says in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu: God knows the truth. And even though God knows the truth, David HaMelech feels he has to be as specific as possible, because God works through certain malachim. These are the malachim Asharis that come in front of the Kisei HaKavod, called the Matriginon, the Kitrug. These are the prosecutors. And David wants to get the Melitza Yosher, those malachim who are defense attorneys, to get them involved, to wake them up and say, "Come to my defense." This is how David HaMelech feels. He's so vulnerable because he's afraid of his sins. So the Gemara asks, Amar Rabbi Yeshua Bereid Ravidi Maikra, you gave me this whole spiel that David, in addition to his chassidus that he woke up in the middle of the night, in addition to his chassidus that he got his hands dirty with blood, he also exposed himself to the boshes of Mephibosheth. Where did you get that from? I mean, that's not in the pasuk that we dealt with. Again, our pasuk was Tfilo le David shamra nafshi ki chasinani. There's no allusion, there's no hint to the possibility that David is exposing himself to boshes. So the Gemara answers, Maikra, which pasuk? Now the Gemara quotes Kuf Yud Tes. Right, we spoke about Kuf Yud Tes in the past, and it says there, "Vadabra beidosecha neged malachim v'lo evosh." And there are many different commentaries here and interpretations of how the word malachim in this pasuk is a reference to Mephibosheth. We'll mention a few. But again, the bottom line is, Vadabra beidosecha neged malachim. Neged malachim means neged Mephibosheth. And the word neged means that my opinion was contravened by his opinion. Neged means that there was a head-on collision. Why is the word malachim indicative of Mephibosheth? So one approach in the Mepharshim is that Mephibosheth was a great scholar, a Talmud Chacham, and the Gemara establishes in Gitna, Daf Samach Beis, that Talmidei Chacham are called Molochim. They are called kings. The other interpretation is that Mephibosheth came from a lineage that was royal and Melucha, that could have stepped up and become kings. And therefore he's called a king.
What shape was he from?
He was from Shevet Yehuda. And the third pshat is, which I thought was the most fascinating pshat, is that Mephibosheth was actually a melech. Because there's a story in Tanakh about a short period of time between Shaul HaMelech and David HaMelech, in which, in that short period of time, the person who took over the melucha was Mephibosheth. But Rabbosai, if you go with that pshat, then you're assuming that the Mephibosheth here in our sugya, the Rebbe of David HaMelech, was the son of Shaul. Because the Mephibosheth that was appointed for a very short period of time of Melech was the son of Shaul. So it's very interesting that Shaul, in a sense, is the arch enemy of David, and yet his son was the Rebbe of David HaMelech, if you go with this particular pshat. But that shouldn't shock us, because who is Shaul HaMelech's other son? Yonatan. And Yonatan was in love with David. They had the closest friendship. That's the paradigm of friendship. So in any event, there are many different ways of answering the question why the Gemara assumes that the word Malachim here is a reference to David, to Mephibosheth. And now the Gemara goes on. And the Gemara tells us, you should know, Tana, we learned in a Braisa, Lo Mephibosheth Shmo, his name was not really Mephibosheth. And the Gemara is going to ask in a minute, why did we give him this acronym of Mephibosheth? But what was his real name? His real name was Ish Boshes Shmo. So the Mepharshim ask, why does the Gemara quote this whole discussion right here at this place about the fact that Mephibosheth was not his name? And they answer that the Gemara is bothered by the following question. David says Mephibosheth Rebbe, my Rebbe Mephibosheth, Mephibosheth Rabbi, and you're not allowed to call your Rebbe by his name. So the Gemara wants to tell us that Mephibosheth was not his name. It was an acronym. It was a kinui, what's called a kinui. Have you ever heard the word kinui? In what context did you hear the word kinui? Nidarim, okay, called kinui Nidarim. What else? In Gittin. Because in Gittin, when you write the get, you have to write all the names. Those are called kinuyin, hamachuna, all the different names. The question is whether b'dievet the get might be possible if you leave out the kinuyim. If it's a kinui that most people know it by, and nobody recognizes his real name, that's a very serious weighty halach in Hilchas Gittin. In any event, the name of this individual was Ish Boshes, and he is, as we said before, he is mentioned in Shmuel Beis, Perek Beis, as the son of Shaul HaMelech, and he took over the Melucha after his father Shaul died, and for that period of time, David was ruling over a different part of Klal Yisrael in Shevet Yehuda. Tosus here writes that he doesn't like the Girsa Ish Boshes Shmo, because he says that we don't find anywhere in Tanakh that there was someone named Ish Boshes, the son of Shaul. And Tosus has a different Girsa, and this is based on a different pasuk in Tanakh, that his name was not Ish Boshes, but rather his name was Ish Baal. Ish Baal. And this Ish Baal was indeed the son of Shaul HaMelech, but from a different wife, actually a Pilegesh, whose name was Ritzvah Bas Aya. And you'll see this all outlined in the Psukim in Divrei Yomim Aleph Perek Ches, for anybody who's learning Tanakh. The Lama Nikra Shmo, Mephibosheth. And it's interesting, why did, if his name was Ishbosheth, why was he called Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth emphasizing his mouth. Shaya Mevayesh Pnei David Be'alocha. So I'm not sure why he wasn't called Mephibosheth. But I guess Mephibosheth is the same as Mephibosheth, which means from his mouth came an embarrassment to David's face. You know, when a person is embarrassed, his face changes color. And since the Rebbe of David HaMelech would enunciate a psak halacha which undermined and contravened the psak halacha that David HaMelech had already issued, that would cause busha to David HaMelech. David HaMelech was not afraid of the busha, because David HaMelech from time to time, and Michael, this could answer your question, made mistakes. And when Mephibosheth would point out those errors, David HaMelech would be embarrassed, but nevertheless he would accept the ruling of his Rebbe, and he was willing to change his psak. But as I told you before, there's another piece to this story, to this Chagadya. And that's going to come up right now. Lefichach, the Gemara establishes that as a reward to David HaMelech, Shoya Maktin is Atzma, Rashi says that he lowered himself and he exposed himself to this very deep and profound embarrassment to be humiliated publicly, that he issued a psak, and then if he boshes undermines it, is Zacha David v'yotze menu Kilov. Kilov was the son of David who's most known amongst all of David's children as the Chacham Gadol B'Torah. I mean, there's, of course, Shlomo HaMelech, but in pure Torah as we know it today, meaning, you know, the alumnus of Halacha, the greatest of his children was Kilov. He was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. In fact, we'll soon see that Kilov was greater than Mephibosheth. Imagine, Mephibosheth is the Rebbe of David, and David HaMelech is completely machnia himself to Mephibosheth, but now he has a son named Kilov, who even supersedes Mephibosheth in his scholarly brilliance. And since we're telling stories about names, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo Kilov shmo. You should know his name was not Kilov. Kilov is also what we call an acronym. It was a kinui. Eli's name was Daniel. V'lama nikra shmo Kilov. Why do they call him Kilov? Shohaya machlim pnei Mephibosheth ba'alocha. Now, the word kilov should be split into two. It's kol. Kol is miloshin kiloyon. Kiloyon means to be embarrass someone. Av, the father. And who's the father here? Mephibosheth is called the father here because he's the av behora. He's the father of psak halacha. And the Marsha points out that why is it that this individual by the name of Kilov, or his real name was Daniel, why did he merit to embarrass Mephibosheth? And the answer is because David HaMelech issued a psak, Mephibosheth then critiqued that psak and caused klima and caused boshes to David HaMelech. And then, after Mephibosheth embarrassed his father, meaning Kilov's father, Kilov came back and he said, no, my father's right. And he would prove my father David HaMelech's original psak, and therefore he was machlim Mephibosheth. And David HaMelech is very proud of his son, and again you could ask why. Is it sort of like vengeance? You know, he feels a sense of excitement in the fact that now Mephibosheth is getting a measure of what he gave David HaMelech. So that's what the Gemara says, absolutely not. That's not why David is so proud of his son. The Olav, and regarding Kilov, Omar Shlomo b'Chachmaso, and the Mefarshim explain that Shlomo, in his two books, in two of his books, namely Koheles and Mishlei, is called the Av Chachma because these are Sifrei Chachma. Chachma here means wisdom, understanding the nature of a human being and all the ethical postulates of how to live a life. In fact, the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos says, Yotza bas kol v'yomra b'ni im chacham libcha, that David HaMelech, by writing these two works, again, Mishlei and Koheles, is called the chacham, and Rashi and Baba Basra points this out. And what now is David HaMelech saying? Actually, it's Shlomo HaMelech who's writing Mishlei, but Shlomo HaMelech, says the Marsha, is saying this in the name of his father David. And he's turning to Kilav, and he's saying, Bini, my son Kilav. Again, this is Shlomo HaMelech. Now, Shlomo HaMelech was a brother to Kilav, not a son to Kilav. But he's saying over in the name of David HaMelech. And this is recorded in Tanakh and Mishlei. Bini im chacham libecha yismach libi. As a result of your great wisdom, my heart is very joyous. Gam ani. Okay, so that's the first part. Now, what does it mean, gam ani? Esmach gam ani al kach shezachisi libcha kamoscha. Now, it's not only is the world full of joy because of your uncanny brilliance, but I myself, as a father, have been zochet to such a son. And the reason why I was zochet to such a son is because I was willing to receive the blows, so to speak, the embarrassment, the humiliation from Mephibosheth, from my Rebbe. And now Hashem gave me as a schar, as a reward, a son who would now turn back and be greater than my Rebbe in wisdom, in halacha. And says the Marsha, I want to read to you the Marsha. He says, Nira, it seems to me, Sheba Osan halacha shehichle Mephibosheth is David. In those halachas, those verdicts that were issued by David and Mephibosheth embarrassed David, Yomalo Sheta, and he said, you made a mistake. Ba kolev acherkach. Kolev came immediately afterwards. The Hera, and he demonstrated she David HaMelech tzadak, that the original psak of David was correct. And David HaMelech's original psak was now reinstated. So you see that even if you shoot down a psak, that's not final. It could be that you'll be able to bring back that psak. And al kach yismach libi, says David HaMelech, I'm so happy, not because you were machlim Mephibosheth. Ella says to Marsha, my joy is mishum shizbar al yidei kilov shahora aso haisan chona. David was thrilled that he understood the Torah properly, and that's what it means, yismach libi gam ani, meaning gam ani. David HaMelech says, I agree with Kilav, because he is reinstating and re-establishing with proofs my original psak. And therefore, even though I was shosek in the presence of Mephibosheth, I was silent because I didn't have a way of disproving Mephibosheth, and he's my Rebbe, he's greater than me in Torah, but nevertheless, I retract my silence, and I re-establish, and I am reaffirming my original position, my original psak. That's the Marsha here in this sugya. And now the Marsha goes one step further to complete the sugya, and he says that in the next statement, Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei V'Omer, Shlomo adds something about Kilav, and he says the following. Chachem. Chachem means you should be mitchachem. Bini. You should be very smart, even smarter than you are. That's what David HaMelech turns to Kilav and he says. V'samach libi, and bring even more joy to my heart. V'yashiva charfi davar. So I can come back to those who blaspheme against me, and I have something to say to them. And there's a whole long discussion in the Marsha about the detractors of David HaMelech. David had a lot of people who tried to undermine him during his lifetime. Just one second, I just finished this one Marsha before I lose it. And Kilav, by being Mevayish Mephibosheth, was able to counter against the detractors of David HaMelech. Why? Because when Mephibosheth said that David made a mistake, then the enemies of David, the detractors of David, were joyous. Umachrifen es David, and they went out publicly, and they made fun of him, and they humiliated him. But Viata, says the Marsha, now that Kilav came back, and he clarified that David HaMelech's original hora was correct, Adarab, it was Mephibosheth who made the mistake, that's when David HaMelech declared, Ata, Now, simachta libi, and why? The ashiva charfi davar. I'm now happy because ka'et now, ani yochel ahashiv l'mecharfai davar, I have something to respond against my mecharfim. Machrifim are those who try to slander against me, and now I have a counterclaim. Beautiful marsha. I mean, the marsha had so much to sugya. It's amazing.
Oh, good.
So,
we're always taught that Shlomo was the wisest of men. So where does Kilei come?
Shlomo was the wisest of men, I think, in the understanding of the universe, the way it operates. He had a perception of the human soul and psyche. He was the great ethicist who formulated the principles of ethics. But we don't find... Now, I'm not saying he wasn't a Talmud Chacham. That I'm not going far as to say. He had a certain Chachma Ruach HaKodesh that no one else had. But as far as, you know, the strict, you know, understanding of the halacha and the way it operates in order to come to insights and define the halacha and come to final decisions, Kilov was even greater than Shlomo.
It also might have been a different period of time. I'm not saying Shlomo was so smart earlier on, but after David passed away, maybe that's when Shlomo took
over. Okay, but I don't know if we have to go that way. I just think the simple way of saying it is that his Chachma Kilov was superior to that of Mephibosheth, who was the Rebbe of David. And even after Mephibosheth slugged him up and disproved David HaMelech, Kilov came and he disproved the disputes and he refuted the refutes of Mephibosheth to reestablish the veracity of the psak of David.
I think Gemara Kedushin on Kibbutz is usher to agree with your father in a dispute.
Yeah, but not in Torah. If it's a shtickle Torah, and you have proof to your father's Torah, then adarab. The fact, I would say the following: Kilov is being mekayim two great mitzvahs here, maybe even three. Number one, he's issuing the correct psak. That's one mitzvah. That's called a tzedek tirdo. Number two, he's being mechabit his father, and number three, he is giving a psak that is the true psak of Torah. And in that sense, Kibud Av is even greater. Now, Evan, you could ask me another question. And that is, would a son be allowed to argue with his father in Torah?
I thought it would be the safer, because Shlomo inside the safer.
Exactly. There are ways of doing it without violating Kibud Av. But then you have to be very sensitive. You know, you have to say, you know, Rebbe, we learned this way and we learned that way, and that's how you talk to your father. But then even in this case, I think Kilov is agreeing with his father, and that even though, you know, if my father says to me, you know, I think that the political winds are moving in a certain direction, I say, Dad, I think you're right. You know, that's not Kibud Av. But in halacha, when you have an insight in halacha, and in this case to prove and demonstrate that your father came to a right conclusion, adarav, I would say that in addition to the general mitzvah Talmud Torah, you obtain a unique kiyum that's unsurpassed of Kibud Av.
Because what the Gemara is saying, that you're acting like your father needs a rise, and to say, and to act like your father needs a rise.
Look, Evan, the proof of the pudding is that it says, Bini Samach Libi, right? Libcha Yismach Libi. That your Chachma brought me Simcha. You know, we say that a father can be mochel on his coven. I mean, this is even more than just being mochel on his coven. You've saved me. And you brought such simcha to me. And you saved me in two ways. Number one, you saved me by proving that my psak was correct, and I no longer have to be humiliated about my psak. And number two, you saved me, according to the Rasha, and protected me against the cherpa, the chiruf, the giduf of the enemies of David HaMelech, his detractors, who tried to show, look who this David HaMelech is. Okay, Rabosa, I want to spend just 3 minutes, if we can, to finish the sugya, and then to learn with you this piece that we gave out. The Gemara asks the question, V'David mikari l'nafshei chassid? Is it really true that David calls himself a chassid? I'll show you another pasuk, in the famous L'David Hashem Ori, and that pasuk leads me to the exact opposite conclusion. V'aksiv, the Torah says, David Mel says, Lulei hemanti l'ros b'tuv Hashem b'eretz chayim. This is a very, very heavy pasuk. Very, very radical pasuk. The word lule, which has to be interpreted means im lo. Now, if not for X, then something terrible would have happened in this particular context. And David HaMelech says that something's about to happen, and if that happens, but that which will happen is conditional. And if the conditional is not met, then blessed Hashem, that condition, since it wasn't met, undermines the threat and the possible doom, the impending doom that could have happened. What is David saying? David is saying that something saved me. And what saved me? My emunah, my faith. What kind of a faith? Liros b'tuv Hashem b'eretz chayim. And here, we're going to interpret these words according to Rashi, and then according to the Malbim. Rashi learns that David HaMelech was perplexed by the famous reoccurring theodicy question, theological question of tzaddik v'ralo, that we see tzaddikim who suffer. We just saw it this week in a very profound way. And when you see such a thing of tzaddik v'ralo, it inevitably causes you to ask questions, to raise doubts about what we call hashkachat Hashem, chas v'shalom, about the providence of God. And it can bring you to a state of being kofar, of denying, heretically denying hashkacha pratis and schar v'yonesh. And David HaMelech says that I'm in a very precarious situation here, because I'm looking around and I'm seeing what's going on, and I don't know what's happening. I'm very, very confused. So what I'm going to present to you now is the pshat of the Malbim. The Malbim says the following. And again, it's not fair that I give you the Malbim, who's 9 centuries after Rashi, before I give you Rashi. But the reason I do so is because, again, never quote me on this, because I'll deny I ever said it, but I think the most important commentary on Tanakh is the Malbim. Again, if you quote me, I'll deny I ever said it. Obviously, Rashi is Rashi, you know, but the Malbim says the following. What does David HaMelech mean when he says, Liros b'tuv Hashem b'eretz chayim? David is claiming, I am dedicated to a certain belief. That belief is in the goodness of Hashem b'eretz chayim. What is Eretz Chayim? Says the Malbim, Eretz Chayim is a reference to Olam Abba. And basically, what saves David HaMelech is the emunah, is the faith in Olam Abba. Because it's only the faith in Olam Abba that could justify tzaddik v'ralo. The Yisuri HaTzaddikim ba'olam hazeh, says the Malbim, that if tzaddikim suffer in this world, it's in order to be marbe scharam li'olam Abba, to expand and multiply their reward in the next world. And therefore, tzaddik v'ralo can only be attacked or countered by the belief in Olam Abba. Says the Malbim, that's what David HaMelech is saying over here. Lule, if not for the fact that I believe that I will see the ultimate goodness in Olam Abba, then I would be nichshal chas v'shalom in kfira, in hashkach, in schar v'yonesh, to see that even though tzaddikim are dedicated to Hashem, and I'm one of them, nevertheless, there's so much suffering, the tzaddikim suffer so much in this world, but the answer is, hemanti b'eretz chayim, I believe in the next world. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful, stunning pshat of the Malbim. Rashi, on the other hand, interprets it differently. Rashi says that pshuto shel mikra, what David HaMelech was saying, im lo she'emanti she'ezke b'tovas Hashem b'eretz Yisrael. That Eretz Chaim is not a reference, as the Malbim would have it, to Olam Abba, the infinite world of life, but rather to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Chaim. And what is David HaMelech talking about? Says Rashi, my enemies, those who hate me, are trying very hard to get me out of Eretz Yisrael. And how are they doing so? They're trying to undermine my Yiras Shamayim. And amongst them is Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech is persecuting David. He's running after David. And these people who instigated Shaul, you know, they got him all reared up against me. David HaMelech says about them, Ki gershuni hayom istapeach benachas Hashem lemer lecha avod Elohim acherim. In Shmuel Aleph, Perek Vav, David HaMelech says that these individuals are trying to throw me out, gershuni, to exile me from Nachas Hashem, from Eretz Yisrael. And basically they're causing me, I'm in a very precarious situation, to worship other gods, to give up my whole belief. And if I have to go from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz in order to protect myself against my enemies, then the influences of Chutz Laretz, where they worship idols, is going to undermine my belief. It's an unbelievable statement of David HaMelech. And therefore David HaMelech says, Lule, but there's one condition. I'm not going to leave Eretz Yisrael like they want me to do, even under that pressure, unless I have no emunah, I have no faith, that I can find tov, I can still find goodness in Eretz Yisrael. But says David HaMelech, Hemanti, I believed, the condition was not fulfilled, the im lo of lule never came to fruition. I am dedicated to the belief, b'tuv Hashem, that God will bestow goodness upon me, b'eretz chayim, here in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore I'm going to be tenacious about it, I'm going to remain in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not going to let them throw me out, I have the faith that eventually I will be zocha to tuv Hashem, be eretz chayim.
Left for Aray Plishtim, because Eretz Yisrael. So what's the broad? I heard that if you live outside.
Can you speak a drop Lanishol?
Yes. He fled to Gat, which was one of the Plishtim. It's Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
So it's not outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's Eretz Yisrael. So what's the broad? If you live outside the Jewish sovereignty, Jewish government, you're like living in Chutz La'aretz.
No, it's an Irish Ruba'akov or something like that. Even if it's in Eretz Yisrael, it's like he went to Chutz La'aretz. But at the end of the day, he remained in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Moshe, if I would stop the sugya right here, you know, pause, what conclusion would you get to? How would you describe the emuna, the faith of David HaMelech? What grade would you give it? You know, if you're counting from 0 to 100? 100, right? 100 plus. But take a look at the next part of the sugya. V'tana mishmei de Rabbi Yossi, we're going to learn in the name of Rabbi Yossi, lama nakud al lule. The word lule in Tanakh, according to HaMesorah, has nekudos on it. And the Mefarshim explained that nekudos mean a lack of clarity. You know, don't take it 100%. There's some inhibition here. It's not complete. It means that lo haya barur li David HaMelech. It wasn't absolutely clear to David HaMelech sheyizkeh liros b'tuv Hashem, that he will get the goodness, whether it's Olam Abba, according to the Malbim, or according to Rashi, it's Eretz Yisrael. Amar David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, muvtach ani b'cha, I have reliance on you. Shatu mishalim sachar tov. We'll see what that phrase sachar tov means. L'tzadikim lasid lava. But I'm not, my faith and my belief that I will be zocha is not complete. Why? Aval eini yodea im yesh li chelek b'neihem in lav. David HaMelech doesn't know for sure that he will have, like the other tzaddikim, a chelek, a portion, in this promise of schar tov. So I don't get it. We just finished saying that David HaMelech and what saved him from kfira and denying Hashgacha Chas V'Shalom is the fact that he had a full-fledged emunah. His emunah was ironclad. It was like the stone in the rock of Gibraltar. Now we're saying, wait a minute, Nakud, there are dots on the word lule to tell me that David HaMelech was unsure of himself. And the answer is, the Gemara says, Shema Yigrom HaChet. It's unbelievable. David HaMelech lives in two worlds, so to speak. In one context, in one world, he's able to save himself from chas v'shalom kfira, from undermining his faith. He sees tzaddik v'ralo, and yet he believes in Hashem. Everything will work out. It's all part of a divine plan. His faith is complete. It's perfect. But on the other hand, when he thinks about himself and his own future, he doesn't feel guaranteed for sure that he'll be zocher to all the merits and all the rewards that tzaddikim will be zocher to because of Shema Yigram HaChet. And the Meiri here is quoted in the footnote. He says that even though David HaMelech hirba b'tshuva, he was like the paradigm of tshuva, he spent most of his life doing tshuva, nevertheless, chash Shema Yigram HaChet. And this, says the Meiri, is a message for all of us. Kol shekein shar b'nei adam. How about us? Where do we stand? We didn't do half of David HaMelech's tshuva. Certainly, tzrichim lachshosh b'kach, we have to be worried about it. And the Mefarshim here, the Ein Yaakov, say that Shema Yigram HaChet, the word chet is always identified with what kind of sin? Shogeg? It means that David HaMelech is saying that I don't know if I sin b'shogeg. Not every sin b'shogeg is known to the person, and therefore David has to be very nervous about this. And that's why when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yaakov Avinu, I'm going to protect you, Yaakov Avinu is still afraid of Esav and Lavan, because Shema Yigram HaChet. Maybe he had some chet b'shogeg, which he's not aware of, and therefore, even though Yaakov Inu did tshuva on any chet of shogeg that was yadualo, that he knew about, but he couldn't do a full tshuva at least for chatoim, for shkogas that he didn't know about. And that's what the Gemara is going to interpret now. Kidder Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, Rami Hoksiv. On one end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Yaakov Avinu, Hine Anochi Imcha, Ushmaticha B'chol Asher Teilech, I will protect you wherever you go. And nevertheless, despite that promise, at the beginning of Parashas Vayetze, it says, Uksiv, Vayira Yaakov Miot. When he encounters Esav, you remember Esav is coming with the 400 men, Yaakov is overwhelmed by fear. How do you reconcile the two? Omar, but Yaakov Avinu says to himself, Shema Yigrom Achet, the Havtocha, the God's promise, will not be fulfilled, will not be realized, because there's always a possibility that I sinned, and therefore if I sinned, those promises will not come to pass.
Is it possible to look at it as David's concern with the chet, with Uri Achiti?
Right.
In other words, it was such a big thing that he was afraid that maybe I haven't got the schut.
Right. But then the word chet is not shogeg, but yeah, that could be a possibility. I wanted to point out to you that there's a machlokas how to interpret the two words that David HaMelech said, Sachar Tov, Latzadik. What does it mean, Sachar Tov? Schar, by definition, reward is good. So why do you have to add the adjective Tov? Apparently, there's some schar that's not Tov. So one pshat is that the Rishayim will be rewarded in this world for their measly and very limited sparse actions of goodness, and that will be bad for them, because by Hashem paying them off in this world, they'll be destroyed, they'll be excluded from the world to come. That's one interpretation. The other interpretation is the following. There's a pasuk in Iyov, this I found fascinating, this is the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ishchai. In Iyov it says, Mi hikdimani v'ashalim. If you came before me, I will bestow goodness and reward upon you. What does that mean? Hikdimani, you came before. And the Ben Yehoyada quotes a Medrash Tanchuma that gives examples of people who do the mitzvahs, or shall we say prepare for the mitzvahs, even before there's a possibility of doing the mitzvahs. Fascinating. Like for example, a person prepares the tzitzis, meaning the fringes, and he hasn't yet acquired a talis. But he's already preparing for the mitzvah. Or maybe even more than that, he already relies on the fact that Hashem will give him the opportunity to fulfill that mitzvah. Gives another answer. Misha samake, a person builds a fence, ad shalo nasati lo gag, and Hashem hasn't even given him yet a house with a roof on it. But he believes that the house will be built, And therefore, he is so convinced that he'll have the opportunity to do the mitzvah that he builds the fence so that immediately when he builds the house, he'll be able to mekayim the mitzvah. And the Midrash goes on and gives other examples. That's called mi hikdimani v'ashalim. Schar tov, which means the greatest reward, is given to someone who already does a mitzvah before the mitzvah is given to him. That's the highest level. And David is saying, ani mamin shetitein li afilu schar tov, al asei tov, because I prepare for the mitzvahs, relying on Hashem that He will grant me the opportunity to do the mitzvahs. But I'm reminded, you know the famous story about the Chassidish Rebbe? He has a chassid who Nebuch is childless for years and years. Every year he comes to the Rebbe for a bracha. And then, you know, what happens is, after 10 years of coming to the Rebbe for a bracha, a friend of his who's also childless comes to the Rebbe for a bracha. And within 9 months, his wife gives birth to a baby. So the first chassid comes back to the Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, I don't understand. For 10 years I've been asking for a bracha. This guy came for the first time and his bracha was mekuyim, and what about mine? He says, there's one difference. He got the bracha for me, he went out and he bought a crib. His reliance on the power of my bracha was such, he had no question about it, and therefore, with that reliance on my bracha, the bracha was mekuyim. So Rav Osai, what we're up to now, if you want to make a note of it, is the sugya of Chachamim Omrim, which is after the two dots. That sugya, in Yirtz Hashem, will leave... Oh, no. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. We have one more piece. Kedisanya, the Gemara says that we can illustrate this concept of Shema Yigro Machet with a Brisa. The Brisa says that in the Shira it says a double language. Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavor Amzuka Nisa. And the Gemara in the Brisa wants to dash in the double language. Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem, Zubir Rishona, that's at the time of Yoshua. Ad Yavar Am Zukanisa Zubiashni at the time of Ezra Nehemiah in the second Commonwealth. Mikana Omru Chachamim, based on this equation between Birishon and Birishnia, Ru'uyim Ha Yisrael Le'asoslem Nes Bimei Ezra. I mean, just like there were tremendous miracles that happened when Yoshua conquered the land of Eretz Yisrael in the Bir Rishona, so too, by analogy, by equation, there should have been great miracles that would take place when Ezra would come on Aliyah Shniyah at the time of the Second Commonwealth. Kederach Shenasalehem Nes Bimei Yoshua Bin Nun. So then the question becomes, that's what the Bryce wants to understand, why do we find that at the end of the day, there were the great miracles of the first Aliyah of Yoshua's conquering Eretz Yisrael did not take place at the time of Ezra. As a matter of fact, at the time of Ezra, there was nothing miraculous that went on. But rather Koresh and Achashverosh and Daryavush, they all gave permission, the Malchei Paras, to invite the Jewish people to come back to the land of Israel. And as a result of the fact that we would totally depend upon their green light, their permission, we were Mishubadim Lehem. And that's why during the period of Purim, for example, which is by Sheni, we find that we don't say Hallel because Akati Avdi Dachashverosh Anan. We are completely subjugated to the kings of Paras because there were no great miracles. The Hashem didn't allow us to just conquer the land. In fact, I think according to the Tanakh, there were only, Shalom, you'll correct me if I make this mistake, there were only 42,000 Jews, I think, who came on Aliyah. A fraction of the Jewish nation.
Not the best one either.
So what happened to this promise that Hashem says, Ad Yavor Am Zukanisa, which is a reference to Bayis Sheni. So the Gemara says, Ela, the Brisa says, Shegora Machet, that during the time of Ezra, there was a lot of sin, there was intermarriage and everything else. And as a result, the original Avtochet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there will be Nisim and Iflos, and we'll conquer the land, and it'll be a sovereign Jewish country, that never came to pass as a result of the Goram HaChet. So we see in a very profound way in Jewish history that even when God bestows upon the Jewish people promises, great promises, nevertheless, they're always conditional. We can lose our rights for those promises to come to fruition. Okay, Rabbi, so this page from Rav Kook and Mirtz Hashem will pick up on Tuesday. I don't know, is anybody interested in learning on Sunday? Maybe. Because, you know, so far I haven't given shiurim and brachos on Sundays. I don't know if anybody wants to, you know, we need more time to fill in, you know, the missing pieces.
Why not?
All right, so we'll negotiate that. So let's take a break now for about 5-10 minutes. Let's make it 5 minutes if you can, and we'll study Chumash, something relevant to Parshas Toldos, and that'll be exciting. Yeah. Okay.